break them all down. Kristen, how's it going? Welcome back.
Oh, thank you for having me. How are you guys doing today?
We're good.
It's Monday.
Doing great. Coming off a Leafs win.
Another Leafs victory.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I think where we have to start might be what's going down at practice today. I kind of teed it up going into the break, and there is an absolute blunder being taken out at the facility right now. And for those who have missed it, I'll just explain what's going on with the line. So it looks like Bunting, Matthews, and Kashe is line one. Mikheyev, Tavares, Marner line two. Kerfoot, Kamp, and Nylander as the third line. Engvall, Spezza, and Simmons as the fourth line. Kristen, like I said, this is unexpected to see this big of a shuffle in the lineup. I thought maybe the second line to get Tavares going, but the entire lineup being kind of shaken in a hat, and here we go. Just what are your initial thoughts about what's going on at practice today and these new look lines for the Leafs?
Well, I think that the what we know is that William Nylander has been probably the Leafs' most consistent, productive forward of late. And if he's on a line with David Kamp, who has one goal in his last nine games, and Alex Kerfoot, who has two goals since December started, you're probably looking at a situation where Sheldon Keefe is trying to get these guys going who aren't producing by putting a guy who is really on his game with them. You're trying to light a spark. You're trying to get something going with that third line. Because you can see, you know, you look at Matthews and Bunting, they've been playing really well. Mikheyev's been producing. Tavares could use a little boost. That's why you've got Marner there. You know they've played well together in the past. Kasha's coming back from his COVID absence, so he's going to need, you know, you don't want to put him back on a third line that's struggling, right? Because that's just not going to help anybody really get their legs going and get some confidence. So when I look at those top three lines, and you just know that Sheldon Keefe, he'll speak later, and I imagine that he'll be saying something along the lines of, look, we need to get more production out of our depth players. We can't just be relying on the top guys to score, because you see what happens. Look, you know, that Rangers game, when it sort of peters out from your top two lines, there's not a whole lot there happening that the Leafs need to support them. So I just think this is an example of, hey, you know, Keith going to Nylander and saying, this is not a demotion by any means. This is just, we need you to go and help make these guys better right now. And that's obviously something that, the Leafs are really going to need to be able to compete in the second half is better depth scoring.
Do you think there's an angle to this, Kristen, that's trying to get that second line going a little bit too?
Well, I think with Tavares, I mean, obviously he had a great start and things were going really well for him. And it's just, hasn't felt of late like he's really been able to have that impact offensively. I think his defensive game has been strong, but it's just he doesn't have that same jump. He doesn't have that same sort of, you know, oomph in his play. And he's just, of course, he's generating chances, and that's what everyone will focus on. But in terms of actually putting pucks in the net, it just, he hasn't really had it. And I don't know if that's his line mates, if that's just been, you know, the natural course of a season. But you know that he and Marner have played very well together in the past. And so that's where I see that connection coming back. I think Mikheyev, the way that he's been able to really start to find a groove after all that time off, I think that that's strong on the left side. It's just Tavares just needs a bit more of a playmaker. He just, I think, needs somebody who can set him up, who can maybe help him get a couple greasy ones in, get the juices flowing, get the confidence going again. And that's where, you look at what Tavares means and the fact that Marner has the skill set that he does. We know how dynamic he can be as a playmaker. It just makes sense that you would put those two back together. And then Kasha, I think, will benefit from an opportunity there on the first line as well, like I said, with just balancing it out. There's just hasn't been a lot of balance, I think, to the Leafs offense lately. And this looks to me more like maybe a more focused, more, you're just trying to make something happen with some of your bigger players, and that just means juggling. But I don't think this is a bad thing. I know that fans will look at this and they'll start to panic, but I don't think that's a bad thing by any means.
No, I'm a really big fan of Sheldon Keefe's willingness to tinker. Even when things are going well, there's always ways to improve them. Have you noticed anything different about Sheldon Keefe's approach this season? I was just talking about his willingness to tinker, but he seems more animated on the bench. And then, of course, he's definitely giving us some more noteworthy sound bites after games. A lot of people raised their eyebrows at his soft and purposeless comments, which he clarified on Saturday before the game against the Islanders.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that there's a difference so much in Keith in how he's portraying himself as a coach. I think the comments that he made after that Rangers game, I just think it's an example of maybe a little bit of frustration maybe boiling over, in the sense of you've got this team that's blowing leads again in the third period, that's been a problem for them in the past. And it seems like it's always the same cyclical problems with the Leafs. You know, we talk about the same things every year. Why can't they hold a lead? Why aren't they a better team at X, Y, and Z? And it just feels to me maybe a little bit more like Keith is at that point too, where he's like, why do we keep dealing with the same issues? Why do the same ones keep kind of cropping up? And why does it feel like there's this level that the Leafs could be at, and then they're right there and like they could hit it, but then they're just falling just a little short of it. And it just, there's more there, I think, is what I get from Keith. There's more there that he wants that he doesn't see consistently enough. And so the difference to me, I mean, he's always run a hard practice. I think he really truly does say to the players what he says publicly. And I do think that that makes a difference in kind of how he's perceived, is that at least if you're willing to say it behind closed doors, you know, and you're willing to say it publicly, like you're just, there's not a miscommunication there. That some coaches might shy away from that because they might say, hey, what we say in the room stays in the room. But Keith, I just think, is honest. I think he understands that there's a lot on the line here for this team. They haven't had the success that they wanted to in the playoffs. They don't want these same bad habits to keep cropping up. And I just think that there's a coach there who's really motivated to not really necessarily always be liked by his players. I don't think he always needs to be guys' best friends. He'd really rather players maybe, he's going to go down the bench and tell Auston Matthews, hey, that wasn't good, what you just did. We saw that very animatedly, as you mentioned, on the bench last week. And to me, that's just a coach who is determined to get the most out of his players, whether they like him for it or not, because ultimately, winning cures everything. Winning is the best thing. And there are times where I've thought maybe Keith has been a little bit himself, maybe a little bit soft on some of these guys in terms of his analysis or in terms of what he said to us about them. And now it just seems like the tide's turned and he's more willing to say, hey, you know what? We need to be better than what we've been because we have fallen short of our own ability. We have fallen short of expectation. We don't want to keep doing that. So let's really, you know, be willing to hold ourselves accountable and be honest about where we're at. And I think that that's something that if it's permeating in your room, if you have a good team, you have a mentally tough team, they're going to take that lesson and they're going to do some good things with it.
In conversation with Kristen Shelton of ESPN, and you can find her work at ESPN.com. And in your latest piece, Kristen, you put together a midseason report for each team, and you had Justin Hall as your player who needs a bit of a reset here for the Maple Leafs. Why do you think that he's taken such a step back this year after kind of breaking out last season?
It's such a great question, and it's one that I've thought a lot about because I see so much in Hall's game and how it's evolved. Like I remember covering him his first seasons with the Marlies and seeing the way that he was able to grow through those experiences and then coming up and being scratched and never being a consistent part of the Mike Babcock Leafs and then really getting that chance under Keith and running away with it and being, you know, the exact opposite of a guy who needs a reset. You know, he'd be that guy that has had the terrific first half if we were talking about last year. But it's just, I think it comes down to what he did sustainable. Was it just kind of a flash in the pan? Hey, you know, a guy who hit his prime at the right time had one, you know, really great season. I don't think that's the case for Hall. It's just, I don't necessarily see that same dominant ability that he had playing alongside Muzzin last year, where they had great chemistry. They were able to really read off each other well. They, I just thought, really had a rapport on the ice together where it just didn't look as hard as it has this year. And Hall just seems to be, he's a half step behind. He's maybe thinking too much. It's almost like maybe the pressure of having played as well as he did is catching up to him a little bit in just in terms of his execution and Muzzin as well. I mean, Muzzin, he's had his injuries, right? And he's getting older as well. And that's where, you know, if Hall previously had been really relying on Muzzin, you know, to really support what he was doing. And now Muzzin's been in and out. He's dealing with his own issues. That can be really having an effect on Hall as well. So I think it's a combination of factors. But I do know that when you see Sandin, you see Liljegren, you see what these guys are doing, if you're Justin Hall, you want to be, you know, playing to a level that is above, obviously, where those younger guys are, but you also want to be playing at your best. And it just doesn't feel to me like we're seeing the best of Justin Hall. So maybe that's what's to come here in the second half. He had some time off because of COVID, and maybe you come back, you've had a little bit of a reset, got a bit of a rest here for a long run ahead. And I just think that Hall can really still be a very effective player. It's just, he's got to find that rhythm again, got to find that confidence. And I think when he does that, you're going to see a player that's up to the caliber that we saw last year.
On the flip side of things on the blue line, Kristen, I don't know if it's possible for any player to be underrated in this market, but Morgan Riley is getting a lot of love from John Tavares and Mitch Marner specifically over the weekend about how he's wildly underrated. It's insanity. He's never been to an All-Star game. First off, you've gone from working in this concentrated market to a larger scale look at hockey at ESPN. Do you think he's a little underrated in the league? And he's just having such a great year. Does anything look different about him this season to you, or is it just Morgan Riley at his very best?
Well, you know, it's funny. We think back, not last year, but the year before, where Riley was in the Norris Trophy conversation, having a great year. And I wonder how insulated that is to Toronto, you know, because when you go into the wider scope of hockey and you just see individuals having such great years, whether it's an Aaron Ekblad in Florida, whether it's a Victor Hedman, whether it's, you know, the usual suspects, the Roman Yossis, do we focus on those guys because perennially they're so good? And so Riley kind of flies under the radar outside of Toronto because is he a true number one defenseman? That's always been the question. Is Riley number one, or is he just a number one because Toronto doesn't have another number one, so to speak? And they've worked obviously very hard over the years to find the right partner for Riley. They've tried a lot of different guys. TJ Brody has seemed to be that next best partner for him after Ron Hainsey. And I see Riley as a number one defenseman. I have been a huge, I think, champion of his in this market because I do think he's underrated. I think what he provides and what he has provided on the ice through all the iterations of the Leafs when they've been great offensively, when they have struggled offensively and, you know, been good defensively, struggled defensively, he has always been pretty even keeled in terms of his production. He's always been that guy you could rely on. Even during his, you know, quote unquote bad stretches, he was still so important to what they did defensively. And it's not necessarily as flashy, I think, his game as maybe some of those other guys that are constantly being talked about. And it's maybe why Riley doesn't get the overall attention that he does in Toronto is just he plays, you know, a meat and potatoes game a lot of the time. But then this year, kind of like we saw 2 years ago, when that offensive output comes through, it really does make just a huge difference, I think, in his overall ability to contribute, his overall game, the confidence you see him play with, the confidence the team has in him. And the other thing is, I think when you play on a team with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander, you maybe that's where a little bit of that underratedness comes from too for Riley, is that the Leafs have been scoring so much that they've been able to outscore a lot of their defensive issues. So maybe you don't notice as much what O'Reilly is doing on the blue line because, hey, they score a lot of goals and that's what everybody talks about. But I do think defensively, we've seen the Leafs without Riley. We know where that goes, and we know that he is their best, their brightest, and he's going to be here for many more years. So I think it's a combination of things, but I would say, in my opinion, he is underrated throughout the rest of the league. but that probably does have a lot to do with the other players that are on the ice with him. And I'm sure that he is very happy to be underrated if it means that he's got Matthews and Marner and all those great players around him.
Yeah, 8 mo years to be exact. And like that contract, that contract now is looking like a genius, savvy signing by Kyle Dubas. Because when you look at those deals that were signed earlier in the year for about $9.5 million, I mean, now you look at that contract, $7.5 million for this type of production. I mean, that almost seems like a steal at this point, given the defensive market.
Yeah, but you know what? It's funny you say that, because I was thinking the other night watching the game, you know, would this be the season Riley was having if the contract was hanging over his head?
You know,
is part of it that you got your business done, you're staying, you know you're staying, this is your team, you got 8 years. Is that the freedom that you kind of see in his game, right? And maybe that's why he was eager to just say, hey, you know what, this is a great contract for me. Maybe I could push it to the end of the year. Maybe I could get more money on the open market. But if it's going to cost me a night's sleep this year, wondering like, oh, I've got to go out and I've got to hit this total, or I've got to play better, or you go through a rough patch and suddenly you're thinking, oh man, I'm hurting myself in the next deal. Why do that to yourself? I think that a part of it is, great, I'm locked in, I'm where I want to be, and now you're seeing what a great year he's having. I think the two go hand in hand. So some guys, you know, they want to push for the bigger payday, but that's never really been Riley's MO. You know that this is where he wants to be. He wants to be a Toronto Maple Leaf, and I think a little less on the paycheck for the ability to play well for a team you've invested so much in, that's probably a really good feeling, and I would think a contributing factor in what he's doing on the ice this year.
Yeah, and $7.5 million sheets still ain't bad. Still ain't bad. I don't think he's going to be losing sleep. Yeah, don't think he's going to lose sleep about maybe he could have got more. He should be happy with the payday he's going to receive every July 1st. All right, Kristen, a treat to talk to you as always. Really appreciate it, and we'll do it again soon.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. And if you could hear any of that construction noise that's happening, I do apologize. It was unplanned. So thank you for rolling with that.
No worries. I thought it was we were going to have a LeBron chair incident, and you were going to be like, no, it's drilling of some kind. But we decided to kind of just let it go. I know that all too well from back in my day in the city. Have a good one, Kristen.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.